I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. The nuclear situation in Japan has refocused attention on the controversial power source in Florida. There are five nuclear energy reactors in Florida, including four located south part of the state and one near Crystal River north of Tampa. But there are plans to build new reactors in Florida. On this episode of Intersection, we'll talk with a top executive at Progress Energy's Crystal River nuclear plant, a consumer advocate about concerns with nuclear energy, and a spokesman for the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission to find out what the industry is doing to prevent a major disaster. Those conversations coming up on Intersection. We're talking about nuclear power in Florida on this episode of Intersection. I'm joined by Lonnie Thompson. He's president of the Florida Consumer Action Network. Lonnie, good to have you here.
Thank you.
Good to speak with you. And we are also joined on the phone by John Frank. He's vice president of Progress Energy's Crystal River nuclear plant. John, glad you're joining us by phone.
Good morning, Mark.
Florida has nuclear reactors located in South Florida, mostly, and those are operated by Florida Power and Light. But there is a plant at Crystal River in Citrus County, which is operated by Progress Energy. Both utilities have requested to build new reactors, and that process is currently under review. But I wanted to start with you, John Frank, talking about your facility at Crystal River and what systems are in place to protect your plant from things like hurricanes, a storm surge, and other disasters that might occur, maybe even a terrorist attack. How do you prepare for that? What's in place?
Yeah, sure. Good question, Mark. We at Crystal River and as part of the entire industry are required to both design and maintain our facilities to be able to withstand any natural events such as a hurricane. Our design basis for Crystal River 3 depends on our ability to withstand a category 4 hurricane for wind and a category 5 hurricane for storm surge. So essentially all important safety systems at Crystal River 3 are approximately 30 feet above the sea level so that we are able to withstand such a large storm surge and still maintain both safety of the plant and ability to restore the plant back for our customers in Florida. This is pretty typical in the industry. Beyond that original design, there are multiple layers of safety systems available both to protect the plant itself as well as the public.
And when you talk about Crystal River 3, that's the plant that has been offline since 2009 and repairs are being done to it at this time?
Yeah, that's correct. There are actually five generating units at the station. Crystal River 3 is the third of those units, and it is the one nuclear unit at the site.
Do you have to prepare differently for natural disasters versus a terrorist attack? Because we've seen in Japan that there was a series of cascading events that seem to happen that have overwhelmed their safety systems and ended up with the buildings that actually house the reactors exploding because of leaking hydrogen gas. Do you have to prepare differently for different types of events, and can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. Although there is a lot of overlapping equipment that would provide some assurance that we would be able to handle some similar events, some of the which have been driven after September 11th, 2001, when the nation recognized our vulnerability to terrorism. But for example, in a hurricane, we're required to shut down prior to the arrival. And quite frankly, if you look at the regional conditions we operate in versus Japan, our natural disaster, probability is different. Our most likely event is not a tsunami or an earthquake, but more likely a hurricane. And as such, we have time to shut down the plant, and in fact would be shut down prior to the arrival of hurricane force winds by procedures. And that would allow us to put the plant in the safest condition prior to any storm surge. And once again, those design considerations would protect us from even the worst storm surge that we could ever possible to expect to experience at Crystal River 3. Now, with regard to terrorism attacks, that has required us, as we recognize that vulnerability, that the industry as a whole and certainly Progress Energy and the station has taken very proactive action to prepare the station to be prepared to deal with what essentially is the unknown. And as such, we have temporary and mobile equipment that can provide cooling both to the core as well as to any spent fuel pool to help deal with the issues similar to what is going on in Japan, but might be due to some other problems such as a terrorist attack at the facility.
Well, let me ask you that. A couple issues brought up there. When you say that you're prepared for storm surge, does that mean that equipment and that sort of thing is elevated off the ground, or how is it prepared? Is it especially hardened, or how is it prevented from being damaged in an event like a storm surge?
Well, actually, both. The site itself is lifted up. The plant is on a raised man-made hill. We call it a berm. That berm keeps the entire nuclear plant about 30 feet above the water level. So the berm protects us from a storm surge, from that large hurricane that could come in and push the storm surge up. So all those safety systems, the plant itself is protected from the surge itself. In addition, we have hardened equipment. All our buildings that are house any safety-related equipment. And when we say safety-related, we mean equipment that is important to maintaining the reactor and the spent fuel safe. That equipment is in hardened buildings, which can withstand all earthquakes which have been experienced in this area, as well as the hurricane force winds that we would could potentially hit the plant. So that even in those harsh conditions, those systems are in good shape. For example, we are designed to be able to maintain the plant safe in events similar to what has happened in Japan. And what I mean by that, the real issue at the Japanese plant that's driving the problem is they've lost not only their ability to receive power from offsite the plant, but also their emergency diesels, which are available as a backup. That storm surge took out the diesels, actually removed the diesel fuel oil tank, as well as wiped out the offsite power grid. We're allowed under our procedures, and we have equipment available to be able to respond to what is called, in this case, a station blackout. In other words, a blackout at the station of all electrical power. We have both steam-driven pumps to provide cooling. We also have a hardened diesel-driven pump, which can provide cooling to the reactor. It housed inside a seismically qualified building, a watertight building. The basement of that building is 30 feet above the water, and then the building itself is watertight, with watertight doors. So we have a hardened facility capable of responding to similar events which have occurred in Japan. And our customers and our neighbors in Florida should feel safe with regard to the way our plant is designed and ready to respond to such an event.
I want to bring Lonnie Thompson into the conversation. Lonnie, you've heard what John has been saying about the safety features at the Crystal River nuclear facility. From your standpoint with the Consumer Action Network, do you have concerns about safety at this plant?
Listening to him, it seems like they've taken most of the precautions needed based on what we've had in the history. It may be a situation like what's happened in Japan that they did not expect a hurricane, earthquake of that magnitude. I know one of the things he said that they're prepared for a Category 4 hurricane. What if it was a Category 5 in the worst-case scenario?
And let's ask you about that, John. You know, we did see Hurricane Andrew strike down near Turkey Point in South Florida, Florida Power and Light's own facilities. Why only a Category 4 for Crystal River?
Well, let's be careful. We are prepared for a Category 5 storm surge. Some of the buildings, but none that are required to maintain the safety of the plant, would be damaged by winds above Category 4. But let's make sure it's clear that the systems required to maintain the plant in a safe shutdown condition would be able to withstand Hurricane 5 force winds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Lonnie Thompson, I want to ask you, as you've been watching this situation unfold in Japan, what are you hearing in Florida among folks like yourself, watchers of the nuclear power industry in the state? What is the conversation going on about Florida's nuclear plants, as you see that situation unfolding, that catastrophic situation in Japan?
I think it's a matter of the companies taking a look at their emergency plans and making sure that it's updated as much as possible for any type of occurrence that may happen. And listening to the gentleman from Progress Energy, looks like they are looking at their plans, which is good.
Are you hearing any kind of backlash at all towards nuclear power?
No. There is some concern there, but probably mainly from those who were against it even before this thing in Japan. One of the things I did read there is that Progress Energy does have some problems with some of their other plants that they did lead the nation last year in near misses with problems in some of their other plants, especially considering the one in South Carolina.
What kind of problems are you talking about?
Mainly, I read there, this was a report by Bloomberg that came out based on a report from the Union of Concerned Scientists. And what they said is that their most serious U.S. reactor accident last year occurred in electrical fire in their plant in H.B. Robinson in South Carolina, which triggered an unplanned reactor shutdown. And that was followed by an incredibly long series of mistakes by the plant operators. So that's one thing that the nuclear or the energy companies have to do is make sure that they are following proper procedure.
John Frank of Progress Energy, not your plant specifically there, but was that something that was talked about when it happened among Progress nuclear plant operators?
Sure. Just as with this Japanese event, you know, our industry is one that prides itself on learning from mistakes made and trying to continue to increase our ability to both operate the plants reliably as well as safely. The event at H.B. Robinson was one that where we have both as a company and as we have shared the experience at that and some other stations, we have taken as an industry to move forward to ensure that similar events can occur. And we drive. And in this case, while there was not a significant nuclear safety issue that was created, there certainly were a lot of lessons learned.
We're talking about nuclear power plants in Florida on this episode of Intersection. I'm joined on the phone by John Frank. He's the vice president of Progress Energy's Crystal River Nuclear Plant. And by Lonnie Thompson in the studio, he's president of the Florida Consumer Action Network here on 90.7 WMFE-FM. This is Intersection, and I'm Mark Simpson. John, your plant at Crystal River has been offline since 2009, and my understanding is that was because of a standard refueling operation, and that process required cutting into the reactor containment building, which ended up inadvertently causing cracks in the facility. Those cracks were being repaired, but just last week, new cracks discovered in that building. Can you walk us through this? What is the status of that building and the reactor, the facility at Crystal River right now?
Sure. Yeah, the plant is shut down. We have been shut down, making repairs to that containment. And obviously, the recent events in Japan have showed why we are taking this action to make sure we're very careful in restoring the plant back to its original design basis. What occurred back in 2009, we were replacing the steam generators, which are some very large mechanical components that go inside the containment building itself. As part of that work, we were required to cut a hole through the containment wall. This was the first time this had been performed at the station, although not the first time in the industry. And what we have discovered is that as part of that work, once the plant was shut down, we had detention tendons that go inside the building itself. And during that tendon detensioning, the containment wall saw stresses greater than predicted by industry models that we used at the time to evaluate it. And higher than we had anticipated, and specific natures of the concrete we have in our walls caused a delamination. Since that time, we had removed that damaged concrete, replaced it with new rebar and new concrete. As part of the repairs, we had to further detension the building, and now we were in the process of retensioning the building, monitoring the concrete very carefully because it's that transition where some tendons are tensioned and some are not, which caused the original problem.
And just to make sure I'm understanding, sure. When you say tensioning up, you're talking about the rebar that's in the concrete. Am I following you there?
No, obviously we're getting very technical here, but the building itself has tendons, and think of them like cables that wrap around the building and go from the top of the building to the bottom of the building. The way the building is designed, the actual containment that seals any potential release is a steel liner inside the building. It's encompassed within 42 inches of concrete. In order to add strength to the building, should some event occur which would pressurize, an event which would relieve steam inside the building, it's strengthened in this concrete by wrapping these tendons around the building and from top to bottom. And the building is actually sitting there normally under a high amount of compression, so that the energy that is released itself during an event would actually relax the building. I don't know if that makes sense, but we compress the building with these tendons so that as it expands with steam inside the building, the concrete itself is actually relaxing. And so it's important when you're tensioning these tendons to do it as evenly as possible so that the building itself maintains the smoothest shape possible while you're doing this work. And so that's what we were doing over the last couple of months. We were monitoring the building as we tensioned these tendons, and we did hear evidence of cracking inside the building and saw evidence in some monitoring equipment we had installed inside the concrete, which indicated that we had had some further damage inside the building that we need to evaluate how to take care of.
Lonnie Thompson, hearing that, does that raise concerns for you at all, despite the fact that they're going to repair this, that the strength of this facility might be in some way compromised if it was ever to go through a very strenuous event?
I'll leave Mr. Frank at his word that that the problem was something unforeseen based on previous models and their testing. But hopefully, before they bring it back online, that they've tested all the other different units.
I just want to assure both you, Lonnie and you, Mark, and anyone listening, that we will not restore this plant back to service till we can guarantee that it meets all the design requirements. That's our focus. We'll do that. The damage occurred clearly with the plant shut down. There was no safety hazard presented by it, and we will we'll determine the right way to fix the building and ensure that it does have the requirements for operation before we bring it back in service.
Any feel on what the timeline for that might be, John?
Well, you know, right now we're in the evaluation phase. It's early. We have to determine the extent of the issue that we're dealing with, and we'll be working with a number of different firms to develop repair options.
Now, both the Progress Energy and Florida Power and Light have submitted requests to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission to build new reactors in Florida. Progress Energy is hoping to build a whole new reactor plant with two units in Levy County, north of Citrus County. John Frank, can you talk to us what would be different about the designs in this new plant from the current reactor that you operate?
Well, as you know, technology moves forward. The plant in Crystal River was built in the 1970s based on, you know, technology from the late 60s and early 70s. And today, technology has moved on quite a bit. There's some significant changes in the Westinghouse AP1000 design that we've selected for Levy County. Specifically with regard to the conversation today, these new plants have a much more passive approach to safety. Essentially, rather than needing power like the plants in Japan need to cool a reactor, they rely on gravity to provide the cooling mechanism, where heat would rise up into a cooling pool, and then that pool would be cooled by natural circulation, and then the cooler water would flow back through the reactor. So the designs are much more passive and much more reliable in the future.
Do you, Lonnie Thompson of Florida Consumer Action Network, feel like the current regulatory structure put forward by the NRC is strict enough, or is it maybe too strict? Where do you come down on it?
I wouldn't say it's too strict. I think it's just a matter of following current procedures that are already in place and regulations and abiding by those and making sure that the utilities are following those guidelines.
John Frank, from where you're sitting, does the regulatory process seem too strict, or do you feel it should be stricter? Where do you come down on it?
Well, you know, my position and our company's position is that, you know, we absolutely respect the position that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has to maintain public confidence with our industry. And as such, quite frankly, we typically are ahead as an industry of the NRC regulation using our industry groups, specifically the Institute of Nuclear Power Operations in Atlanta and the World Association of Nuclear Operators. And we typically place limits and restrictions on ourselves even before the NRC acts. So, you know, our position is we don't need the NRC because we're going to regulate ourselves to a high enough standard to be safe at all times, and then we respect the positions that the NRC takes with regard to those requirements.
I got to let Lonnie Thompson respond there. I mean, do you trust the industry to regulate itself?
No. It's nice to say that you don't need federal oversight or government oversight, but that hasn't worked out too well in the past, though.
We actually have a permanent NRC staff at the station. All nuclear plants in the United States do. And they spend a lot of time making sure that we're following the rules.
John, how do inspections with the NRC go on? You mentioned having that staffer right there at the plant. Are there surprise inspections, or are you given advance notice? How does it work?
Yeah, yes and yes. There are two residents that are stationed at the facility at all times. They observe everything we do. They have free access to the facility. And, in fact, by law, we are not allowed to notify somebody that they're coming. If the senior resident comes to my office and tells me he's going to go into the control room to do an inspection, it's illegal for me to call the control room ahead of time. Additionally, there's a wide variety of regional and NRR inspectors that at all times have access to the facility, and it's just a matter of them asking for free access, and we'll give them access to where they can make their way into any part of the plant, any meeting, witness any test or procedure or maintenance activity. So yes, there are scheduled inspections that look at specific areas, and then there are continuous unscheduled inspections that we are support at all times.
We do have a question submitted from one of our listeners through Facebook. Laura Jacobo asks, what happens to nuclear waste byproducts and spent fuel rods at the Crystal River plant? Where are they stored, John?
The spent fuels is what we call high-level waste. And currently, the spent fuel at Crystal River 3 is residing at the facility in a spent fuel pool. That pool is about the size of a small YMCA pool. It actually holds all the waste that has been produced over the last, let's call it 33 years of operation at the facility. It's a very, very compact. There's not a large amount of waste. Originally, the design was and the expectation was that the federal government would receive this waste into a federally approved repository. You may have heard
something
of
like Yucca Mountain. Right, exactly.
Yes, Yucca Mountain. And we all know what's happened to that, not from a technical issue, but the legal standpoint of opening up that facility. And we look forward to the day when the federal government complies with its legal requirement to start receiving the waste. Our customers in Florida have spent a lot of money on that facility, and we want them to see the benefit with the ability to transfer that fuel to Yucca Mountain.
John Frank is the Vice President of Progress Energy's nuclear power plant at Crystal River. John, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Lonnie Thompson is president of the Florida Consumer Action Network. Lonnie, great to have you in.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for inviting me.
Coming up next on Intersection, we talk with spokesman Roger Hanna of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We now turn to Roger Hanna. He's a spokesman for the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Roger, you've been in Washington, D.C. area for hearings this week regarding the reactor situation in Japan. What can you tell us about the topics of conversation there?
Well, the five commissioners had a meeting this morning where they received an update from the agency's executive director for operations and also received additional information about what the staff plans going forward. The commission is expected today to vote on a plan to have the staff develop a short-term report based on what we know at this point and try to develop some sort of framework for how the agency will respond in the future. There are also plans in the works to develop a more long-range plan that will include addressing the president's directive to do a review of all operating nuclear power plants in the United States. I'm not exactly sure what format that review will take, but that's something that we're looking at, and you know, we'll make announcements about that once it gets closer.
Turning to Florida, there was to have been an NRC meeting this week in the Sunshine State, but that was canceled after new cracks were discovered at the reactor housing building at Progress Energy's Crystal River plant. How concerned is the NRC about that situation, and are you able to say if this meeting or when it will take place?
Well, from a safety standpoint, there's very little safety significance from that particular event, because what happened is the Crystal River site was shut down and they were doing work to repair a previous gap or delamination, as the engineers call it, in the concrete containment structure for the building. When they were doing that repair work and tightening some cables that are within the concrete, they discovered another gap. When they discovered the other gap, they stopped that work, and now they're evaluating exactly what may have caused that and looking at all the repair options for the future. So at this point, we really can't say when the next NRC public meeting on that issue may be, because we have to get more information. We'll have to follow up through our inspection regime, and then we'll have to schedule that meeting once they decide what their repair scenario will be.
Is that type of destruction or problem arising in a building as repairs are being done, are you able to say, is that a typical kind of event to see unfold?
No, I think in this particular case, this particular feature that they found was literally unprecedented. There were other nuclear plants who had done similar kinds of work and not had the same issue. They evaluated the original gap that they found in containment and found that it was due to the way they had set the plant up, the way they had detensioned or loosened the cables initially may have put stresses on that concrete. At this point, I don't think they're certain what may have caused the additional problem. They're still evaluating and reviewing that information, and we'll follow that very closely. But it literally was unprecedented. It was something that they did not expect and could not have expected based on the models and based on previous experience at other plants.
A couple of utilities, Progress Energy and Florida Power and Light, are hoping to build new nuclear reactors in Florida. And I wonder, from what you're hearing at this week's meetings and picking up in the D.C. area or even regionally back here in Florida, how likely do you think it is that the permitting process will continue moving forward for those proposed plants?
Well, the license review for any new plants is something that will be part of the commission's look at lessons from the Japan events. And I think at this point, again, it's too early to say what effect, if any, there might be on those plans. We're looking at them very carefully, and you know, we may make a decision that may delay or may change that review process in some way, but at this point, it's too early to say what effect it might have. One of the things may also, you know, the company has to make the decision to invest the money and to continue with their construction program if they plan to build a new nuclear plant. So certainly that's something the NRC isn't involved in, but a company would have to evaluate those steps as well.
I recently read a Miami Herald article that discussed concerns raised by an NRC analyst about the model of Westinghouse brand housing structure that would house the reactors at these proposed sites. And this article was saying that the structure is maybe more brittle than current facilities and could be more susceptible to corrosion based on the composition of steel and concrete in that design. Does the NRC have a stance on those proposed Westinghouse brand nuclear designs?
Well, at this point, the staff majority opinion is that it does meet the regulations and that particular design can be used. While there was some dissenting opinion, that's not unusual in our process when you have a number of technical experts reviewing something. There are times where one or more experts may have a dissenting opinion. That certainly doesn't in any way change the overall opinion of our technical experts that particular design can be constructed and operated safely. And that's something that the agency, you know, we'll move forward with. Again, with the caveat that if there are lessons to be learned from the events in Japan, those may be incorporated into the design of new plants as well.
Roger Hanna is a spokesman with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Roger, thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome, Mark. Thank you.
Tell us what you think about nuclear power at the Florida Talks blog. You can find it online at WMFE.org/intersection. There you'll also find links to our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.